We are looking during this month of August at ways that we can prepare ourselves for the work to come when our church year begins in September. The first day of the church year in Unitarian Universalist practice is the Sunday after Labor Day, usually celebrated as ingathering. That's September 9th this year, which is also the first day that we will return to our regular schedule of two Sunday services, so 9 and 11 a.m. starting September 9th. The worship committee and I have created a worship plan for our year, moving through, over the course of the year, the themes of history, leadership, identity, mission, and connections. Our Adult Faith Development Committee has created a series of Thoughtful Thursdays starting September 13th, and other adult religious education classes that are tied into those themes. Our Children's Religious Education Program plan for the year also coordinates with those themes. And our Leadership Development Committee is planning to offer a program starting in November called Harvest the Power, which is a UUA curriculum designed to connect our spiritual stories with service that we might offer to our church. After the 1st of January, I'm hoping to organize an affirmative inquiry program that will consist of one-on-one conversations between church members to uncover our stories, our passions, and our dreams for our church. And that will be followed by our stewardship campaign and then some conversations about possibly revising our mission statement, which is now about 14 years old. And then in April, our church hosts the District Assembly, gathering of all of the Unitarian Universalist congregations from Southern California and Arizona. They'll be here at the end of April. And then in May, you will elect a search committee who will spend the following church year looking for a candidate to be your next settled minister. All of that on top of several goals that the board adopted for the coming year and that I mentioned to you last week. We're going to work around our internal church communication systems, like the monthly newsletter, the weekly email blast, the announcements during worship, and the website. We're going to work around our governance structure, asking questions about the size of the church board, the time and the work commitments required to serve, and the role of the town hall meetings within a democratic system, and so on. Work around organizing our church policies and making them accessible and updatable, and work around making the physical spaces of our church look more attractive and functional. This hall, the church office, that open space that's outside my office, the patio behind the lounge, maybe some air conditioning for some of these rooms. So there is a lot to do and a lot of work, and I am excited about our plans. The work that we've lifted up is valuable and it is important, and the work, once finished, will support your church into the future. I will be eager to show off our beautiful campus and functional meeting spaces when our guests arrive in April for the District Assembly. And the work that we do this year will create an attractive picture of the congregation that the search committee can use then to attract the best possible candidates for your next settled minister. So that work is coming. The work begins in September, September 9th. So the question for August still is, what can we do now to prepare? Before big work begins, we always take time to prepare. If you're starting a new job, there may be a training day that you need to go to, or you may want to make sure your car is in good shape so you can handle the commute or review the bus schedules. You'll want to work out childcare arrangements with your spouse. If you're starting college in the fall, you need to make sure that all the enrollment forms are filled out and you've figured out your financial aid and housing. Maybe you want to get a reading list from some of your classes and get a head start. If you sign up to run a marathon, you don't just wait until the day of the run and then show up at the start you spend several months of preparation, doing training runs to gradually increase your stamina, to make sure you've got the right shoes, and to figure out your strategy for managing your strength when the work of the day finally begins. So for the work of the church year too, we spend the month of August each year gearing up for the big day, September 9th this year, and the year that follows. Preparing for the work of the church means preparing ourselves mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Guiding us through this program, I've been using the work of Reverend Dr. Scott Stoner, who created a wellness initiative called Living Compass. And much of his work on the Living Compass program is available on a website you can find. He also has books and a church curriculum he offers to church groups who want to work through this. What especially attracts me about Dr. Stoner's approach is that he sees wellness in this holistic way. There are four points to the Living Compass: mind, heart, soul, and body. All four are important to wellness. All four need attention if we are going to be well prepared for any hard work. So last week we looked at the compass point of mind, and today I want to look at two compass points: emotion and spirituality, or metaphorically, heart and soul. So first, emotional wellness. Emotional wellness includes the ability to feel all of our emotions. A rich life is not walled off from emotions. We feel the full depth of human experience. We can cry when it's appropriate. We laugh when it's appropriate. We feel fear when the reality is dangerous. We feel joy. We feel sadness. Now, just as with mental or physical ability, our ability to feel emotions varies among different people. The spectrum of what's normal is broad. Some people are more naturally connected to emotions than others. So the question of wellness, in terms of emotional wellness, is within the range that is normal for you, are you able to fully feel what there is to feel? Or have you created for yourself walls in your emotional life that protect you from feeling or expressing certain emotions? Perhaps some feelings don't feel safe for you, so you decide you just can't go there. And sometimes that can be healthy, actually, but not always. Perhaps you're worried about losing control, or perhaps you're embarrassed to feel some emotions because our culture tells you that you're not supposed to feel what you feel. Some folks could achieve better emotional wellness by doing self-work or work with a counselor to open themselves up to a more authentic connection with their full range of emotions. And other folks might find themselves too emotional, feeling so much that their emotions interfere with their ability to work or relate to other people or connect to reality. So here are a few questions that Dr. Stoner asks that you can use as a self-assessment of your emotional wellness. He asks, are you handling your emotions, or are they handling you? Are you comfortable feeling and expressing the full range of emotions, sadness and fear, anger, joy, etc.? Do your emotions get the best of you, causing you to say or do things that you regret later? Are you ever concerned that you might be suffering from depression or anxiety? Would you be comfortable seeking help if you were troubled by emotions? Are you comfortable listening and being present to someone else who is hurting, upset, or very emotional? And lastly, in the words of that Serenity Prayer, how well are you able to accept the things you cannot change, have the courage to change the things that you can, and the wisdom to know the difference? Under the compass point of heart, Dr. Stoner also asks us to consider our personal relationships. He includes here romantic love relationships and also relationships with friends and family. And I would add that emotional wellness to me also includes healthy relationships with colleagues at work or with other kinds of communities that you're involved in, like a church. Healthy relationships balance the paired spiritual goals of freedom and connection. To be our best healthy selves, we must feel free to be ourselves. To be fully alive and active in the world, we must create circumstances where we can fully express who we are. Our unique, wonderful, fabulous, never before seen or to be seen again selves. The special gift that we were made to be for the world. But we are not just fabulous, unique individuals. We are also social creatures, living in communities of mutual need and responsibility. And all of us together are connected to something larger than ourselves that gives our lives meaning and purpose. So a healthy relationship recognizes our needs to be ourselves, but also notices the places where our free expression conflicts with the needs of the community to care for all. Healthy relationships and communities set boundaries for the good of the whole that may limit some self-expressions, but also allow the individual to flourish in the communal direction. And it's a difficult balance, to balance the freedom to be the self and the connection to community. So all relationships have this push and pull. Let me be me for me, we want to say, but also understand that I am my best when I'm asked to be accountable and responsible to the needs of others and to fulfill my duties for the good of all. So Dr. Stoner asks these questions. How transparent and authentic are you in your relationships? Are you comfortable being vulnerable with those to whom you are closest? Do you turn to others for help and support when you need it, or are you more of a lone ranger? Is there at least one person in your life that you can be fully yourself with? Do you have any old unresolved wounds from your family of origin that affect the quality of your relationships today? The third compass point of Dr. Stoner's living compass is the compass point of spirituality. Now, when I use the word spirituality, I mean it in an inclusive way that is completely independent of theology. I believe that all people are spiritual. Atheist, theist, agnostic, religious or non-religious, mystic or scientist, or both. So although you might bristle at that word spiritual, bear with me for a minute and let me explain the way that I use the word spiritual. Spirituality has two sides to it. There is the emotional quality of spirituality and there is the cognitive side of spirituality. So Sandy talked a little earlier this morning about the emotional side of spirituality, the spiritual experience that I'm on top of a mountain, I'm looking at the sunset, I'm walking in nature, I'm hearing Beethoven's late string quartets. That would bring up for a lot of people the spiritual, emotional quality of spirituality. But there's also a content to spirituality, which are the things that we believe, the things that we value, the things that our worldview, when we look out what we see. And answers to those questions are also an important part of being spiritual. And it is to that side that I say we are all spiritual because we all ask those questions. All people are spiritual because all people naturally, as a part of being human, wrestle throughout their lives with these spiritual questions of identity, meaning, and purpose. The spiritual questions of who am I, why does it matter, and what should I do? Who am I is the question of identity. What does it mean to be me? What does it mean to be human? Is there a difference between human beings and other animals? Is there a part of myself that is immortal? Those are the spiritual questions of identity that everyone considers. Now, how you answer those defines your theology, which may be atheist or theist, Christian or Buddhist or whatever. But everyone asks those questions. To some people, those questions are very important, and you end up going to seminary because you're concerned with them. And other folks really aren't too concerned. But even if the questions are just asked and then they're quickly dismissed, we all ask them. Why does it matter is the spiritual question of values. What is important? What is worth fighting for? What is worth dying for? Why does it bother me that children are separated from their families at the U.S. border? Should it bother me that the planet is getting hotter every year? Why does it matter? That's the spiritual question of meaning. And the spiritual question of purpose is, well, what should I do? Being the kind of person that I am and valuing the things that I value, what should I do with my life? And what should I do this afternoon? Should I join a monastery? Should I become a lawyer? Should I put on a pink hat and go to the Women's March? Should I grab a clipboard and start registering voters? So all people are spiritual. The answers you give to the spiritual questions define your theology, which could include a God or not, and the way you order your life in response to those questions might make you religious or vehemently anti-religious. You might answer the spiritual questions with supernaturalism or with scientific materialism, but wherever you come out, we all wrestle with those same spiritual questions because it's part of our human nature, a spiritual dimension that is not quite the same as mental, emotional, or physical. So, if you're still with me, the final question for today is, what does wellness of the spirit look like? And Dr. Stoner gives a few landmarks that are scattered around this compass point. First is that spiritual wellness includes a spiritual practice. We had a good discussion about this at our senior lunch a couple weeks ago. A spiritual practice is anything that you do regularly, meaning it's a practice, that is holistic, meaning that it includes all of you, mind, body, and emotions, that it's ecstatic, meaning that it opens you out to that expansive spiritual feeling, and it's intentional, meaning that you do it deliberately with the intention of connecting to your spiritual nature. Spiritual wellness includes participation in a spiritual community. So congratulations, you've got that one. The benefits of belonging to a spiritual community is a topic for another sermon sometime, but probably you already know that being here is good for you in many ways. And spiritual wellness includes practicing spiritual virtues, such as forgiveness, humility, charity, kindness, patience, and so on. Now, the final aspect of spiritual wellness has to do with rest and play, and I will postpone that discussion until next week, because rest and play also relates to the topic for next week, which is physical health, wellness of the body. We began worship this morning by singing together, "With heart and mind and voice and hand, may we this time and place transcend. Attention to all the compass points of our beings necessary to achieve true wellness." We said together in our opening words, "Let us love the world through heart and mind and body." Loving the world isn't just feeling love, it's also planning our love, and it's working our love through physical action. But working or planning that doesn't come from love is also dangerous. So we sang in the words of St. Paul, "Though I may speak with bravest fire and have the gifts to all inspire and have not love, my words are vain as sounding brass and hopeless gain." A healthy life is one where heart and mind and body and soul are each equally fit, equally strong, integrated and mutually supportive, to bring us to the world, prepared it to do the good work of love and peace and justice, inspired by the visions of our spirits. Thank you.